Douglas Ankrah was the one and only the son of Ghana, a very, very proud son of Ghana, a proud Ghana man, and he comes, from Otumblum, proper Central Accra. There's no fluff. But he was also an entrepreneur and wanted to leave a legacy. He wanted to be creative. He wanted to help other people. And the legacy that we're trying to do is even to help create more work for bartenders in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of our Connecting Communities podcast. My name is Abna Sewa, the publishing editor of Akadi magazine. And you were just listening to Lily Nadu Mensa, older sister to the late Douglas Ankrah, the cocktail entrepreneur, author and businessman, who created one of the UK's top 10 cocktails, famously called the Porn Star Martini. This cocktail is a passion fruit flavoured drink made with vanilla flavoured vodka, Passoa, which is a passion fruit flavoured liqueur, passion fruit juice, and lime juice. It is traditionally accompanied by a chilled shot glass of Prosecco. Lauded as a pioneer in the drinks industry, Douglas established one of the popular cocktail spots in London and co-founded the Soho-based London Academy of Bartenders to train bartenders. Douglas tragically passed away in 2021 at the age of 51. Lily, who's a personal brand coach and author of Work Your Quirks, tells us more about her late brother, his career, and how his family and friends plan to honour his legacy.
So I wanted to, first of all, thank you for giving us some of your time. This is a very delicate and emotional story, I feel. So please let me know if there's anything you don't want us to discuss. But I thought we'd start with just talking about your relationship with your brother. Talk about the early days. Talk about Ghana. I think he was born in Ghana.
D, I will call him D because that's what I know him as, is my kid brother, or Douglas Ankrah that we're celebrating today. D was, comes after me, but my mom had twins after me, hence the big gap. So he was the one after, the twins did not make it. So there's a big gap, and D came along so many years afterwards, and he was that child that smiled all the time. Everybody could pick him up. He was the first boy, because I have an older sister, Abigail. So he was the first boy. Mom and dad, just everybody doted on him because he was such a good baby, a good child. And because I think my mom had lost twins between, she spoiled him, to be fair. And we all know that he was and still is mom's favorite child. It's an open secret. and we all talk about it. Even though there was a big gap, he was always chomping at my heels for everything, wanting to follow his big sister, wanting to know, or even disapproving of me. So sometimes I'll do something and Dee would say, "Hey, Star Lily, are you supposed to do this?" He was a bit shy, but he was just the joy that would hoover up all the air in the room. As soon as he entered the room, he'd speak to everybody. And growing up with a brother like that, I think we should have realized that he was special. But if you know what family dynamics are like, he was sometimes annoying. It's like, where is he going with all that speed and energy? And we're just coasting along. So growing up with him was different in terms of the other relationships I had with my other siblings. So yeah, Dee was just special. And he went to boarding school.
Ghana?
In Ghana. Went to Ususal, and we were brought up in a very Christian Presbyterian background. So he was sent to boarding school for a bit, just so he would be an independent thinker. And I think that's what boarding school has done for many of us who were, I think, fortunate enough. Not everybody believes boarding school is a good place, but I think it's character building. Yeah, so that was D. That was D growing up. Boisterous, fun, always getting into trouble. But if we got into trouble, or if there was any trouble, we would hide behind him so that he would go forward, because mum loved him, dad loved him, and they never really told him off.
Oh.
And if we wanted sweets, if we wanted extra stuff, Dee was the one we would send to go and ask for it.
Oh, wow.
Because we knew mum couldn't say no to him. Definitely mum couldn't say no to him. So, okay. Yeah, he was the one that would knock on that door for us. And we'll, okay. we'll push him forward to go and ask for the good things.
So does it make sense? You know how his career progressed and his entrepreneurial streak. Could you see that shift and that making sense because of the type of person he was?
I think so, because he was not afraid of anything, to try anything, because he'd been brought up that he could ask for something. The worst that would happen would be no. So he was just always there asking for things, looking for different ways to get the yes from people.
Okay.
And so that was not a surprise at all. Of course, he started his work as a bar back at Hard Rock Cafe back then. But you could tell that he needed more. He needed more. But just the industry itself gave him that opportunity to grab more, because he knew that being a bar back was, you know, very small in terms of where he wanted to grow to.
So just for us who don't know the lingo when it comes to the drinks and bar world, what's a bar back? Working behind the bar?
Yes, working behind the bar, bringing glasses, cleaning, you know, generally dog's body.
Okay.
Behind the bar. That's how he started his life. And then he thought that, so there's something more than just cleaning up after everybody, but actually being in front there and being the host. He was the perfect host, yeah.
So there's two things that come forward. The first is, we know many Ghanaian households, the career choices, doctor, all of that stuff. So how did he convince your parents that, you know, this is the route he's going to go down?
I think mum, it never really sat with mum until success came, as you do. You know, why don't you go and get a proper job? Why don't you do this? Why? So that was very, it never sat with mum or anybody else, because as far as they were concerned, you're a failure if you're not a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer. I think there's a fourth one, architect or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But those things.
Yeah. But then also his personality, because you talked about him trying to get that yes all the time. So I find that it's interesting. And also in the arena that he's in, this drinks world, which is male dominated. I know he's a man as well, or was a man, also white dominated, that kind of thing, really fast paced. So was that a challenge for him, or was that something he really jumped to?
I don't know. I'm sure there were challenges in every industry, being a the other.
Yeah.
But he had that thing about him that he was nice to everybody. He was jovial. If he wanted something from you, he could not accept a no. Mm. So he would keep coming. I'm still thinking of him in the present.
Yeah.
He had a wonderful, cheery personality. And I think that's what gave him that edge. Mm-hmm. And he didn't think that being black was a barrier.
Yeah.
I think so. And I don't think mum raised us to think like that either.
Okay.
We were meant to be in that room.
Okay.
Because if you grew up in Ghana, all your heroes or sheroes look like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, I think, was a good foundation for us, or for him.
Okay.
That he didn't see himself as less than just because he was black. I don't think he even thought about it most of the time.
I find that when you're born and raised in Ghana, the perception's different. I don't know what age he came over when he came over to England, but I've noticed that it's a difference from those of us that are born and raised here, because you don't have... Yeah, yeah. So I find that interesting. So just talking about his achievements, he had his first bar, the Townhouse, I think it was called.
No. Oh. Let's go back. So after doing Hard Rock and all those, and I think he was Smolensky's and all those places, he then opened the bartending school.
Oh, okay. Oh, was that?
London, okay. London Academy of Bartending.
So that was first.
The bartending school came first.
Okay.
Well, of course, there's no money in being a teacher, right? So he trained a lot of staff at that time. A lot of bar people came through him. But then he decided that why doesn't he, you know, open a bar with another colleague of his, I think Richard, and a few others as well, in Soho, called The Lab.
Okay.
London Academy of Bartending, and then The Lab as a bar itself, a quite nice, quirky, in Old Compton Street. I know all of this because I was always there. I was always there to celebrate whatever he'd done. So it was in Old Compton Street. I remember that well. So that was The Lab. And then he went on to open the Townhouse in Knightsbridge.
Okay. So talk to us about that transition. So The Lab, you talked about that being more educational. He was training bartenders.
He was training bartenders. So I think it was one of the first to actually open to train bartenders, because being a perfectionist, he felt that the staff that he was getting, this is what I'm assuming, the staff that he was getting were not up to scratch for him.
Okay.
So, you know, anybody can be a bartender, but you need the special. I mean, when you see him making a drink, I mean, I just concocted this thing and he'll probably say, no, Stanley, don't do this. He has utensils. He has a whole gambit of equipment to make one cocktail.
Yeah.
You know, so you had to go to school to learn all of that. And don't forget that being a bartender, you're also an artist in a way. You're an entertainer, because people are watching you create all these cocktails right in front of them, and all this shaking and all of that. It's all part of the
performance.
Experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's why he opened the Lab, and then went on to open, he opened the London Academy of Bartending, and then went on to open the bar in Soho.
Okay, so the bar was basically, by that stage, he'd had those trained bartenders that he wanted, and then he had the Townhouse in Knightsbridge. Is that the one?
Yes, the Townhouse in Knightsbridge was, I think, where the famous cocktail, porn star martini cocktail, was made. Actually, it started its life in South Africa.
Wow. Tell us about that.
He was always experimenting with drinks and stuff. Always experiment, always. I think the porn star martini started its life in South Africa as the Intrepid.
Okay.
But it didn't have that ring to it, did it?
No. Did it have the same ingredients, though?
Same ingredients. But then when he came back to London, I think it was with a few friends in South Africa at a bar, I think he mixed a few things and created. When he came back to his own bar in Knightsbridge, he then created the Porn Star Martini and renamed it the Porn Star Martini that we know today.
Okay, so I know that it's got, or this is what I've read, passion fruit, and I've heard people say champagne or sparkling wine. You've got it there.
Hold on, let me I've just mixed some, right? I've just mixed some right now, because it's supposed to have crushed ice in it. I haven't got the passion fruit itself in it, but I've just made some, and it comes with, it's one of the glasses that he had done when he created the bottle, which is this one.
So you can brilliant. See. Is that the one he signed for you?
Yeah, that's the bottle he signed for me.
Oh, brilliant.
When it was launched. So I still have that safely tucked somewhere. And so I've just created that, and then there's I've got some champagne from yesterday. So let me imbibe a little bit.
Yes.
So it has, he created a cocktail kit as well, which he sent to me just before he passed away. And I don't know if you can see this.
Yeah, I can. So it's got,
what's in there is his own passion fruit.
Okay.
And then a small bottle of Grey Goose vanilla vodka. And then Passoa.
What's that?
Passoa is, I don't know, is it Passoa? Passoa is just one of those drinks that the cocktail people use.
Okay.
I don't know. I just drink it. And then And then vanilla sugar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Brilliant.
so you can make it at home. So we're hoping to recreate that at some stage, but that's what I've made today, this morning.
Fantastic.
So cheers, Douglas.
Cheers. Yes.
And then you cleanse, apparently, you cleanse your palate with the champagne.
Oh, so yes, it's a shot at the side. So it
At the
doesn't,
side, it's afterwards, but can you see the Ghana shot come up?
loving the representation. Brilliant.
Absolutely. Many people create things in life that nobody really gives the accolades to. And say, oh, it's an African, it's a Ghanaian that created this. So, yes. So, thank you for helping us represent him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I saw it. Was it last year? I went to African Fashion Week London and there was a sign outside which had the porn star martini, like they were promoting it. It was around the Holborn area. So I've been surprised that not more people know that he created it. You know, I think people know the cocktail. I'm not sure if they associate it with Douglas. I'm not sure. But just asking people, some don't know still, which surprises me. So I know you talked about him being quite, first of all, a very family orientated, but also somebody who likes to be in the background, which is surprising because of the nature of his job.
I mean, when it comes to family, he was always there. He was always checking on people. He was, the first one to call and say, what are we doing for mom's birthday? Or what are we doing for our queen's birthday? That sort of thing. He was the first one to turn up at any of my events and serve porn star martinis to everybody. So literally, I had to learn to understand that he didn't want to be in the limelight. If it's just family stuff, he would just be there because it's a close group of people. But when it's like big things, he tends not to want to be there. I don't know why. So if he would come to an event that I'm organizing, for instance, my book launch, he did all the mixing. He gave me bottles of Prosecco and bottles of this, the drink that he'd already bottled. And that's what we used to launch my book. But he was at the back directing what needed to be served, but he did not want a picture to be taken of him. And it's constant all the time. That has always, I don't understand why he doesn't like pictures.
There's not many of him that I could find.
No. So that's just him.
And yet such a loud in terms of his character and draws a lot of people to him. And you've got to be that showman if you're working in that sector, I would have thought.
Yes, there's a bit of a dichotomy there because one in one side of him is this larger than life personality, and at the other side of him is very private, so private to that you think why, but who knows why he's taking that with him. He's a very, very private person.
That does come across. I know that also he wrote a book, which is hopefully we can talk about because I know that there's some plans with.
Yes, again, he wrote this book before he created, which is Shaken and Stirred
But that
by
was
Douglas.
2004. That's what
I'm not sure. I'm not
I.
sure
Okay.
the date, but
That's what I've got.
oh, okay, then you must be right. I'm not gonna argue with you because there's just so much information. So yeah, so that was the book, Shaken and Stirred, and I mean, I've got copies because I would keep copies for him. For instance, he would maybe have a client meeting that he needed a book for, and he would just meet me in Holborn because I was working in Holborn at the time. So I would go any books. I literally would order the books or have the books in my office, and he would just come and pick one up. And if you were to tell, the people I was working for, when he started creating this bottle, the porn star martini bottle, as a bottled product to sell, he would mix it in the morning. He lived in Brixton. He would mix it in the morning, meet me at lunchtime to see I've made a concoction. Can you test it for me? I'll put it in my coffee cup and just sit there and just imbibe over lunchtime. I would work perfectly after lunch. Maybe I should have, that every now and again. So I'd say, oh, it's too sweet, or maybe it needs a little bit of this. Oh, there's too much of this in it. I think there were times though there's too much pasoa. Okay. But that was too much vodka, of course, you know.
Of course, has to be.
Yeah.
So you were the chief tester and taster.
Yes. How could I say no?
Well, of course not. You've got to do what you've got to do. Little brother's asked you.
Exactly. So so I would help him with testing ideas, testing all sorts of things. He would call me and, you know, keep me, just say, Stalili, what do you think of this? Or yeah. Stalili, I'm doing this. What do you think of that? So, yeah.
So what do you think, you know, because the book came before the actual cocktail. So how do you feel like that transition worked? He wrote the book and the book sort of explained, I don't know much about what's in the book. And how did
the book is really a book of cocktails that, you know, at the end of the day, it's based on, some are based on gin, some are based on vodka, some are based on whiskeys, some are based on brandy. So it's just, you know, a book of various cocktails. So
what
ingredients you need and all of that, you know, ice, how you prepare it.
So
it's like a bartender's Bible.
Okay. And then from that, we get the actual cocktail that he developed. I guess one inspired the other. He thought, let me create my own.
Yes, indeed. So I think he created that before the book came. So the idea, and I think you were alluding to as a family, is to create something for his legacy.
Yeah.
And you would want to put the cocktail, the ingredients on Paul Star Martini front and center. Because it's the number one cocktail in the UK.
Yeah.
So use that as a new book, celebrating Douglas Ankara, creator of the porn star, the famous or infamous porn star martini, and use some old stuff from the book, but create a brand new content that we some of his colleagues in the industry want to work with us as a family to bring about. So there's a book somewhere in the pipeline. A book for Douglas to celebrate his legacy will come out sometime next year. We're working on it.
Brilliant.
Working on it might be around this time, you know, that sort of thing. So I will definitely keep you informed, because we were too overwhelmed as a family when the shock of his passing happened, that we're now getting to that place of celebration.
Yeah, and you talked about that. I mean, you talked about how grief grips you and the shock, because it happened during lockdown. You know, everyone had masks on when you look at the service. So, I mean, obviously talk as much or as little as you want to about this part, but I know it was a shock. So he wasn't ill or anything, was he, before?
No. He had you know, high blood pressure. So it was just a shock that nobody expected. And to be called by mom to say something's happened to Deacon Ipam. I didn't know what to expect, and I didn't expect it to be what I went to find. But I thought I went to support mom, because I thought he was unwell or he passed out or something. Mm. So I went and where he lived, and mom was there, and I said, so where is he? And everybody said to him, the lady said in the house, said he's turned his back. A Ghanaian woman, he's turned his back. I don't know if you understand.
As in
he's when I say he's passed away, he's turned his back.
Yeah,
that's how we say it in the vernacular. I said, oh, how? They said, well, they found him unconscious. Well, they found him he'd passed on. We don't know at what time, but she said, oh, he's upstairs. And there was police, there was ambulance, and then I had to call my sister Abigail, and I couldn't tell her because she was all the way in Preston with one of her boys, with the grandchildren. doing stuff with their grandchildren.
Mm.
So I couldn't tell them. It took a good 2 hours for me to call her and for me not to tell her what had happened and for me to hold the fort until she literally came. So me trying to, mum was just numb. Mum did not speak for weeks and weeks and weeks. Hardly, she just sat there very quietly. And then my sister came and then the tears started. And I felt, because of the relationship I had with him, I felt very much like, I'm his big sister. Why wasn't I there when he needed help? And it was that sadness of, I wish I was there. I wish, you know, wake up and talk to me. So there was that sense of guilt, the sense of why, and there's still whys that we don't have. But I've learned, I think we've all learned to come to terms with it. I've dealt with it differently. My big sister, Abigail, was pretty much his first or second mom, because Abby's a lot older than us. So Abby was the one that did all the caretaking for us, especially Dee and my younger brother, Eric. So Abby took it very, very hard. It was like one of her boys. But as a family, it's a gap, a huge, huge, huge gap.
Yeah.
That even yesterday I went to sit with mum to do some stuff for her, and I saw a card that somebody had written. So I read it to her, and she still doesn't talk about him much. And I try and get her to talk about him. And it's almost like, I don't want to, I just want to remember him as he is or was. But I still try and make her talk about him. And that, I think, will eventually. But since I said, Mom, I think about Dee all the time because of the things that are lying around me. Everything around me reminds me of him because he's created things for us as the family. But she says, I want to see him as the human being, just like you're standing there, Lily. I said, Mom, I know, but this is what we have. So
yeah.
I try and talk about him. We laugh about him because he created so much laughter in our family.
Oh.
He was so spoiled that because he was spoiled and he was the mummy's boy, and I've said it, he was mummy's boy. Douglas was the mummy's boy. Each time he came round, he would sit and expect to be served. And he would expect everybody around him to serve him, including me.
A big sister.
I know. So then I'll have a go at him. So listen, it was like the relationship I had with him was very much, if we had a family gathering, it was going to be words. It would be me and Dee, because we're so similar and we connect very well. So if something needed to be said, I will say it to him, he'll say it back at me, and everybody around us would be like, yeah, there they go again.
So quite similar in that sense. Two peas in a pod, maybe? Or you were each other, you know?
Yeah, we're both in the entrepreneurial space, where my other siblings were very much quieter and calmer.
Yeah.
We were the live wives in the middle. Yeah. That was always creating problems for my mom. My poor mom.
I wanted to just end, because we're actually coming to the end, but I wanted to talk about how you've been able, because you talked about how you've been able to deal with this, but also in your role, because you're a careers coach. Am I right in saying you're a careers coach? Yeah.
I coach people on personal branding.
Okay, personal branding coach. And just how you've been able to deal with it. I look at your Instagram. You do a lot of exercise. You're very fit. You're always talking positively, motivationally. So how has this really terrible situation, how has that helped you and shaped you?
I think in everything in life, you have to draw strength from the things that you're good at. And I've always been that positive person, straight talking person. And if I'm feeling low, I will call people and speak to my friends and my close family that I'm not feeling well today. I'm not, you know, I will. But what is the point, really, to go once in a while? I'll say something really, really low and negative, but that's not me.
Yeah,
we're all human. But I've learned that being positive myself and motivating or inspiring others actually inspires me. If I cannot inspire myself, how can I inspire other people? I talk about inspiration rather than motivation. Motivation, you need someone else to kick your butt to do things. Inspiration is to inspire from within. So I see myself as an inspirational person. And that can inspire other people to be more and do more. And I use personal branding as the conduit to get people to feel better, look better, talk positively if they can, when they can. And negative stuff. Just Douglas's death was awful, awful, awful. However, that shouldn't define us. Anything we're going to do in his memory should be fun. So that's what helps me.
And that's beautiful, that, because I guess what I wanted to invite you to do is just to tell us how you'd like us to remember and celebrate his life and his work.
Douglas Ankrah was the one and only the son of Ghana, a very, very proud son of Ghana, a proud Ga man, and he spoke Ga fluently. I speak Ga with him. I spoke Ga with him, fluent. We don't speak English. We spoke Ga. He was a proud Ga man. And he comes, you know, from Utublu, you know, proper central Accra, you know, where Ga is from, you know, there's no fluff. But he was also an entrepreneur, wanted to leave a legacy. He wanted to be creative. He wanted to help other people. And the legacy that we're trying to do is even to help create more work for bartenders in Africa.
Okay,
and that's part of a foundation that may or may not get off the ground, but it's all talks that we're having with the industry people that he knew. If you go around, there's just so many people, but there's very little time, and there's only one or two people that can make this a reality. So you have to also think about your own life and your own career. But Douglas, for me, was an inspiration for Black people everywhere to create something that you can hold up and say, people say you create something, right? But how many people get to bottle their genius?
Exactly.
That's it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He's bottled his genius and he's left it, and that's it. I'm holding it in my hand.
Yeah.
And I made him sign it to say to my lovely sister Lily, to his embarrassment when he was launching it. Because I knew he was onto something, but I didn't know that it would end up like this.
Well, I hope that we all raise a glass, and I'll be doing that. I'll be getting my own, raise a glass to him and what he's left us.
Yes, indeed. So. And hopefully I can share more with you at some stage when we move on to the book and other things.
Oh, I'd love that. Can we still buy the book?
I don't think you can find it on Amazon anymore.
Okay.
It ran out, but luckily we still have copies. No, I don't think everybody's keeping their copy.
Yeah, okay. Well, if it does get reprinted with the inclusions of the Porn Star Martini, that would be fantastic. And we'd love to promote that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'll definitely keep you posted about. I really appreciate you inviting me to talk about my brother.
I really appreciate you doing that. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode. To listen to more content like this, visit our monthly Acadi magazine Connecting Communities podcast on Apple, Spotify, Buzzsprout, or wherever you listen to your audio. Follow our news on acadimagazine.com and acadimagazine.co.uk, and access exclusive early release content and discounts at ko-fi.com /Acadi Magazine. The music in this episode is called Life No Day Easy by Chechaku and the Suprapong Stars and is a special remix exclusively for Acadi Magazine. Suprapong Stars is a high-octane patchwork of Ghana's indigenous genres, including palm wine music, high life, Afrobeat and Afro-funk. You can find out more about the band on their Instagram, Suprapong Stars. Thank you.